With me on the phone right now is Sebastian Nicholson, the Interim Education Department Manager of Positive Living North. Thanks for joining me, Sebastian.
Thank you so much for having me, Courtney.
Welcome. Could you tell me a little bit about Positive Living North and your role there?
Yeah, so Positive Living North, or PLN, we're an Indigenous HIV organization. Our main office is based in Prince George, but we also have satellite offices in Smithers and Fort St. John. The main topics we deal with through work are HIV and Hep C. So at work, we provide nutritional housing support and support services for people living with HIV. We have an elder advisor who works closely with us in the education department, as well as the entire organization, really. But she spends more time at the fire pit. It's also part of our organization. So the fire pit is a cultural drop-in center. Some people might call it a soup kitchen, but it is so much more. People come in and ask our elder Violet for advice all the time. And it's really, really awesome. And the fire pit is open to the public, anyone who wants to use it. We have a lot of harm reduction services as well. So handing out clean medical supplies, sterile medical supplies to reduce the harm that people might do through, injection drug use or struggling with addiction. And in education, our main goal is to educate people on things like harm reduction, HIV, safer health, and really make sure everyone live their best life.
How did you first start getting involved in the HIV/AIDS education awareness?
So I have a bit of a background in education, and I was really excited to start working with PLN. I was recommended through a previous employer, and, discovering the information about HIV and AIDS when I started working and going through all the, thorough training that we do so I could be qualified to teach about STIs and sexual health and things like that. I was really surprised thinking back to, the sexual health education I got in high school and how poor it was. It was really, really terrible. So I think one of the things that keeps me very excited and really loving this job is being able to share good information to young people and the people who need it and really destigmatize a lot of negative feedback people have when they think about sex or things like AIDS and HIV.
And what would you say the education system would need to change in order to make it better in regards to sexual health?
Well, with sexual health now, I work a lot with people in the school district, and there's lots of really incredible teachers out there now where, it's been a while since I've been in school, and from what I can tell, the curriculum discussing sexual health has really come a long way, and I'm really honored every time a teacher asks me to come into their class just to make sure that their students are getting the right kind of information.
What's the kind of feedback that you get from the kids when you go into the classroom?
Oh, it's excellent. So all our services are free because we're funded through grants. So our payment, I guess, is we ask everyone to fill out anonymous evaluations. Mm. And lots of the comments we get afterwards are always very positive, like we had so much fun, or I didn't know, blank statement was even a thing or possible. I think people are really excited to talk about it.
That's great. Yeah. And how do you manage servicing such a broad area in the North?
Because Positive Living North, we're a charity organization. We get all our funding through grants and donations. We have lots of money set aside for travel. And I think a big part also is that our funding and the grants that we get also pay for our jobs, which means that all our presentations are, available for free to communities. And I think that's it breaks a really big barrier when it comes to money or payment. This is all really important information that everyone should have easy access to and know about whenever they like. So, managing the service, a lot of it is word of mouth, getting out into communities and just showing that, we can be there for the sake of health and nothing else, really,
What would you say some of the biggest barriers are with some of your clients?
So some of the biggest barriers in terms of so we have lots of clients. So in education, we teach high schools, treatment centers, health units, and then for our organization, people living with HIV, those are our members. So what do you mean by clients?
I guess anybody who would access your service. So like any barriers like money definitely is a big barrier. Are there any other ones?
That's really a good question. I think a big barrier in accessing our services probably is stigma. I think it's fair to say that in our country there's a huge cultural aversion to discussing topics about sex, sexually transmittable diseases, and death, which is and all those things are really linked in our minds to HIV and AIDS. So yeah, I would say people's own reservations about the topics we discuss are probably one of the biggest barriers.
Do you think that there's more stigma surrounding some of these illnesses in the smaller, more remote communities than in, say, like bigger centers like down in Vancouver? Or would you say that it's pretty comparable?
I really like to say that maybe in smaller communities, there's a little more. Maybe that there's a lack of education, but I think I'm really a little sad to say that from my experiences discussing our services and doing presentations in Prince George in our area that there's a there's lots of people who are really not open-minded to the subject and are I don't want to call someone ignorant and make someone feel upset for not understanding why the situation's important to talk about. I think definitely province-wide, everyone could stand to learn a little bit more about sexual health and HIV and AIDS.
Now, how do you educate people about HIV and AIDS? What do you specifically try to teach and promote?
Yeah, so around HIV and AIDS, we discuss, how it's transmitted. We talk a little bit about the life cycle. We really try and focus on the basics for most of our clientele, because most people throughout high school or public education, up until recently, haven't had really a really comprehensive discussion around HIV and AIDS. And a big part of this as well, and trying to reduce, the spread of infection and keeping people safe from diseases, is really starting from the ground up. So we also talk a lot about, consent and sexual health, other STIs. We talk about sexual orientation and gender identity, naloxone and overdose prevention, harm reduction, because there's people really isolate HIV and AIDS as a certain disease or a certain illness that certain people get or that maybe certain people are more prone to. But the reality is that anyone can get HIV and everyone's circumstances are different. But starting from keeping yourself safe and healthy and happy, and how to do that is really the most important part.
And that seems like a pretty good lesson for everybody in life, not just for anybody suffering with those illnesses. It's a good life lesson.
Absolutely.
What kinds of things do to destigmatize all of these illnesses?
So, this is also really related to what we teach. A big part of destigmatizing is making people feel empowered and informed around, sexual health and diseases, so that whatever decisions they make, they can take care of themselves. And it's really important to address for the destigmatization that, I talked about it a bit before, but in Canada, our culture, it really shames people suffering from diseases or with diseases, and there's so much stigma around sex and STIs that is really, it doesn't need to be there. I just want to reference my comment earlier about, the education that I received in high school about sexual health. And I remember the topic was chlamydia, the sexually transmitted disease, and we were shown just a horrific image of male genitalia, right? It was unrecognizable.
Right.
And I remember thinking to myself, like, oh man. And the professor saying, or the teacher saying, this is what chlamydia looks like. And I'm thinking, well, you know what? I definitely don't look anything like that, so I'm good. I don't even need to get tested or anything, right?
Right.
So a big part of the destigmatizing is just talking about how important people's own sexual health is and normalizing those conversations so that people can feel, empowered enough and capable enough to, walk into a clinic and ask for an STI checkup because they're taking care of their body and it's, taking action over their own lives.
Do you have any specific memorable moments working with Positive Living North, like any ones that make you feel empowered specifically with something that you've influenced?
Yeah, I think we do presentations with lots of detox programs and treatment programs and lots of presentations with youth. And I think every time I present, and especially with young people who have so many great questions and are really forming their ideas of the world, having really great discussions and seeing young people that aren't scared to ask really good questions and then talk about them in an open way, I think it is really empowering for them, but also myself, right? It feels good to be able to discuss such a, I think, widely difficult topic for people and have it be so fun and have it be such a safe space.
What are some of the questions that you often get asked?
So many. We have anonymous question slips of paper, and in my office, I actually have probably 100 at least slips of paper with just the best anonymous questions.
That's great.
Lots of people ask, when we're talking about HIV, can it be passed through kissing or through spit? People are always surprised when the answer is no. Or people ask really good questions about, on the topic of consent. What are my rights? What are the ages of consent? And really being able to discuss so people know, what their own rights are as a human, right? Having people ask questions about just disease transmission. Yeah, there's too many to choose.
Well, that's a good problem to have. What are some of the biggest challenges that you face in this line of work?
That's a really interesting question, and I want to make sure I phrase this really well. So I'm just going to give a little bit of background for, my life in a day at PLN.
Sure.
And at work, I feel like everyone's on the same page. My coworkers and the people we serve in our communities are really aware of, things like HIV, addiction, homelessness, right? And why they're so prevalent. There's a really big understanding and a cultural understanding and really positive discussions about, our country's history of colonization and residential schools, and the factors that contribute to homelessness and addiction are so strongly linked to, people experiencing trauma in their lives. So imagining briefly, what that history of colonization has done to Indigenous communities and, the shared trauma that could also give to immigrant families or even, some settlers in the forming of our country. It's really clear that the majority of our social failings, stem from that place of trauma or intense emotional pain. And so that's leading me to the hardest part about my line of work isn't, hearing the horror stories of why people are homeless or struggling with their addictions. But the hardest part is walking into my community and, people asking me, why don't homeless people get a job? Or why do people waste their lives doing drugs? And one of my least favorites being asked is, why is this Indigenous person blaming me for something I didn't do? And normally that's, it's a question people feel really personally offended, right, when someone's blaming them for their problems. But people are so quick to judge others, but no one really genuinely stops to answer their own questions that they ask. And I think the reason they don't is because the truth about why people are homeless or struggling with addictions is, it's too uncomfortable to think about. And most people have the very privileged position of being able to ignore the topic and not having it affect their lives in an immediate way.
Many people believe that downtown PG and a lot of downtowns in other communities are unsafe. What is your perspective on downtown?
All cities have some degree of crime and criminal activity, drug use, things like that. But you know, in terms of downtown, I think downtown really is as safe a place as any. I also think downtown happens to be where a lot of our support services, our homeless shelters, and our food services are. So downtown Prince George is, I think, really it's full of vulnerable people. And when I talk about vulnerable people, I mean, I'm talking about our homeless population and our people struggling with addictions. And I know for a fact that our vulnerable people are fighting every day to stay warm. They're fighting every day to stay happy and to stay full. And when it comes to people feeling unsafe downtown because of someone they think of as maybe a shady or uncouth individual, right? I know that the individuals they're talking about typically are so hurt that their grief or their trauma, it comes out publicly in strange ways, and it makes people feel very uncomfortable, right?
What do you think needs to happen to make people feel safer downtown, not just the everyday people who go downtown, but also the vulnerable populations that you were mentioning?
So, if people don't always go downtown and they're nervous about the area immediately, I think people can, people can walk in pairs or go downtown with a friend. But especially for just for safety purposes, right? People can carry naloxone. People can learn to avoid confrontation with people undergoing psychosis. And psychosis is something I think is really misinterpreted, especially downtown. When people, so our country currently, we're going through an opioid crisis, right?
Right.
There's lots of psychoactive substances that are really damaging to people's mental health and their health, but they're highly addictive. And at some point during using some of these substances, people can, people can hallucinate, but it's so much further than hallucination. I think hallucination implies that someone knows that what they're seeing isn't real.
Right.
But when people are undergoing psychosis, their drug-induced psychosis, what they see or what they're imagining, to them, it's not something they're imagining, right? Something is actually present or daring them. And lots of times when I see situations become escalated downtown, it is because someone is undergoing psychosis and, someone responds to the person who is clearly unwell. And then maybe there's some verbal transgressions, or the situation gets heated, and then maybe the person who isn't going through psychosis gets upset, and then both people just get upset, and it's a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if people can understand that when someone's undergoing a drug-induced psychosis, that you don't need to respond to that with anger,
right?
Or in the long term, what we can do to make downtown safer, I'm just speaking now as an organization, right? And
right.
As a city, what can we do? We can get more funding and more training for our shelters and our low-income housing workers and centers. We can provide more stable homes and culturally oriented programs to give people the opportunity to heal. But, more importantly than that, and going back to what I was talking about before, we can, and this is what everyone can do, we can be kind. We can not judge people, right? We cannot answer people with anger. We can teach our young people about our history, Indigenous history, and what racism looks like. And the responsibility of increasing the baseline standard of living in our communities is up to our communities and people in positions of authority. Because I think everyone, whether someone's homeless or struggling with addiction, or they have a very stable life, everyone just wants to feel safe. I think we all just need to talk a little more openly so that we can work together to make that happen.
When it comes to the future of Prince George, of all of these communities, and the future of HIV and AIDS awareness, what do you hope for?
I hope that, our members, I hope that people living with HIV can disclose their status without being worried that someone's going to feel unnerved by the information, or, that someone can disclose their HIV status to their families and not have to worry about, being removed from their home, right? I I hope that eventually young people in schools won't be running around joking about, oh man, you can get AIDS from that.
Right.
I hope that we can just, have a stronger community in the future and have a community where everyone is supportive and encouraging paths of healing and ways of understanding. Other than that, if anyone heard this and is interested about our services, you can look up Positive Living North on the internet, and we travel to communities all the way from Williams Lake to Fort Nelson. And in the pandemic, we have been very open to meetings and presentations over Zoom. If anyone wants to learn more, all our presentations are free. And literally, even if you just have a question, we are here to answer and make people feel safer. So, talk about it. Get involved and help make our community stronger.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for your input, Sebastian.
Thank you so much for having me, Courtney.